You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay three nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
I get so many headaches every month.
It could be chronic migraine, 15 or more headache days a month, each lasting 4 hours or more.
Botox, onabotulinum toxin A, prevents headaches in adults with chronic migraine. It's not for those who have 14 or fewer headache days a month. Prescription Botox is injected by your doctor. Effects of Botox may spread hours to weeks after injection, causing serious symptoms. Alert your doctor right away, as difficulty swallowing, speaking, breathing, eye problems, or muscle weakness can be signs of a life-threatening condition. Patients with these conditions before injection are at highest risk. Side effects may include allergic reactions, neck and injection site pain, fatigue, and headache. Allergic reactions can include rash, welts, asthma symptoms, and dizziness. Don't receive Botox if there's a skin infection. Tell your doctor your medical history, muscle or nerve conditions, including ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, myasthenia gravis or Lambert-Eaton syndrome, and medications, including botulinum toxins, as these may increase the risk of serious side effects.
Why wait? Ask your doctor. Visit BotoxChronicMigraine.com or call 1-800-44-BOTOX to learn more.
Mic check, 1, 2. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer / Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm double dipping again today. Life is crazy. I've been gone on a hunt for over a week. I got back and then I instantly got sick for 2 straight days. And so I'm behind schedule here. So I got to double dip and take advantage of this conversation that I had with the co-host of the How to Hunt Deer podcast, Jason Thibodeau. He's going to eventually be taking over for me on the How to Hunt Deer podcast, and he's going to be moving forward with that. But I'm showing him the ropes right now, and long story short, it's going to be awesome when he is able to take full control over it, and you're going to have the same exact badass content coming to your ears, hopefully every week. So this episode that we're getting ready to talk about today is all about what to do when things go wrong. And I know that for many of us, it seems to be every year something goes wrong. Every year something goes wrong. Now, there are ways to minimize that, but this episode specifically is about what to do when you get busted, what to do when you are, when you fail, and how to course correct to get yourself where you need to be to, achieve your goal, whether that's just trying to fill the freezer or you're trying to go after a specific buck. So it's a good open-ended conversation. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. Before we get into today's episode, though, I am going to run through a list of partners here on the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you're looking for a saddle, go check out tethered.com. Tethered offers a variety of all of your saddle hunting needs, right? Climbing sticks, saddles, saddle hunting accessories. So go check them out. Wash Broadheads. As you will hear in this episode, I connected on a mule deer in South Dakota this past week. And I will say this, my broadhead absolutely did its job and destroyed the deer that I hit. So huge shout out to Wasp Archery. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off wasparchery.com. Vortex Optics, got my spotting scope back just in time for the season, for my trip out there for that mule deer. The eyepiece had broken off. I took advantage of their VIP warranty. I sent it in. They fixed it for free, shipped it back to me for free. And now I have a a pretty much a brand new spotting scope. So a huge shout out to Vortex. Feed Hub, if you run feeders and you are in the process of trying to manage your farms, the Feed Hub is a mobile device that you run through your Moultrie mobile app that connects to any SpinCast feeder on the market and allows you to remotely control and on demand schedule feeding times, check your feed levels. It's a badass product for those of you guys who can run feeders. So next on the list is Code Blue. Go to codebluesense.com, check out all of their real and synthetic deer urines. And one of my favorites, my mock scrapes are starting to heat up. The real scrapes are starting to heat up. And the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit is a badass accessory to your scent regimen. So I would go check out the preorbital gland and go to codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Huntworth. They have their brand new camel pattern out this year called Vertec. They got some new products that are going to be released here pretty soon. And then on top of that, they have just a wide variety of all types of terrains and all types of conditions, gear that you need, from the hottest of temps to the coldest of temps, with their heat boost technology, huntworthgear.com. And then two more left, Reveal trail cameras. My trail cameras are starting to heat up. A lot of nocturnal pictures, but the movement has definitely increased. And I'm monitoring all that through my Reveal trail cameras. The only thing you have to do is go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal trail camera. And then last but not least, my company, Full Sneak Gear, have been sending a lot of orders out. Thanks for being patient with me while I get some of these new sizes printed and back in. And so thank you very much for that. Outside of that, good vibes in, good vibes out, and enjoy today's episode. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I'm your co-host, Dan Johnson, and our other co-host, Jason Thibodeau. Jason, how we doing, man?
Hey, we're doing pretty good. How about you, Dan?
Not too bad, man. I'm actually waking up this morning back in Iowa from a mule deer hunt that I was on last week. And I will say this, you look forward to going on these out-of-state hunts. Plan, you prep, you do all this stuff, and then the time comes, you're excited to go on it, you get there, and then you're like, oh, I miss home, I miss my family. And then you get back here and you're like, man, I miss wherever I was just at.
And yeah, so absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm really dealing with I guess postpartum depression from South Dakota.
Sure. I can understand that. I feel that every year I go out, you know, and try to enjoy the trip and time away, but a couple days in and you start to miss a few things. And then by the end of the trip, especially depending on if you're seeing animals or not, you can persuade yourself to come home early.
Yeah. And the cool thing is I pulled into the driveway. I drove 8 hours yesterday. Pulled into the driveway, and sure enough, my youngest son, daddy's home, comes running out, gives me a big hug, and then it kind of lets you know, like, they do like you. They do want you around. You know, it's not like most days where you feel like, Jesus, man, dad's getting no respect.
Right. Yeah, dad's the mean one, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, so I went out to South Dakota. I left last Sunday after my son's football game. I think we talked a little bit about this last week. Bounced around in the prairie for a few days. Missed one decent mule deer that was bigger than the one that I got. And then the next day I went out and we found this drainage that just had deer stacked in it. And so, fortunately, we had a lot of deer to play with in this area. And so, we watched one bed down, and then I located him. The guy that I was with located him, but I was already down low. And so, I kind of creeped along this bottom, and he was up on a ridge kind of through the binoculars looking at him. And so I could see the angle that he was at, right? And so sure. I creeped up behind him. Long story short, got into like 15 yards. And he's down.
Oh, wow.
He's behind this creek, like where the water erodes away the inside, the outside curve of a creek or a stream or whatever. And it's bone dry. And so he's sitting right in this grass that is literally laying over top of him. And so I follow his neck down. I can see where he's bedded down. And I creep up to the edge. And I draw back. And the arrow goes right over his back. And I'm just like, and I thought, honestly, that was going to be my only chance at this mule deer buck, at a mule deer buck in general. I thought, there it is. Just missed. This blew the whole week.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I thought it was over. And so we said, okay, this drainage has too many deer in it. Let's just chill in here all day. And then when the deer start moving 4 or 5 o'clock, then we'll see what's in here, and then we'll go back to the truck if we don't see anything. Well, we didn't see anything, and we start heading back to the truck. Well, they had come up out of a cut and went up into this drainage that we couldn't see, except for when we got up top, we could see down in it. And long story short, man, they were feeding away from us probably 500-600 yards. And the guy I'm with, mm-hmm. I go, man, by the time I would get there, they'd be gone. And he goes, well, you won't know unless you try. And I was like,
right,
it just kind of hit me. I'm like, that's right. That's the right approach to it. You got to go do it. You know, if you don't go do it, you'll never know. And so I started hustling down this up opposite side of this big ridge, crept around in, and just slowly worked my way up. And you know just as well as I do how dry it is out there. You know, every step is a crunch, like you're walking on a bag of potato chips.
Right.
Yep. And they fed right in front of me, and I was able to. They were on their feet. There was five of them. They were feeding, and the one that was up higher at the top was fortunately the biggest one in the group, and I was able to put an arrow in him, and that was it. Right. There's some other parts of the story, like a follow-up shot. I hit him in the spine. He went down, and I had to do a follow-up shot to finish him off. But it was an amazing feeling. The wind was perfect in my favor. It was a strong wind, so it masked up all of the crunching that was going on. And so I have now officially gone out to South Dakota 6 years, Nebraska looking for mule deer 3 years, and I finally have one mule deer buck to show for it, and it was worth every trip, every penny I spent on gas, dude. It felt so good to get that monkey off my back.
So how did that feel in comparison to, say, maybe your first whitetail?
My first whitetail, I didn't know what I was doing, right? Even back then.
Okay.
And so I'll compare it to the first doe I shot. Dude, I was with a bow. I was jacked up. I was excited for it. But I think this is different. This was different because of all the energy that I put into these trips going out here. And then finally it paid off.
Yeah. Now, you had to learn? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it. Finally it paid off, and it felt really good.
So do you think the learning curve as far as like a Midwesterner going out to learn how to hunt mule deer is more so than, say, a Midwesterner learning how to hunt whitetail? And is there different levels of like strategy and thought that have to go into it?
You know, you sometimes hear people talk about how dumb mule deer are. I don't see that. I don't see it. They are survivalists just like whitetails are. Now, out west, a mule deer will bust you, and they'll bounce off maybe 50 yards, and then they'll stop, and then they'll try to look for you again. A whitetail out west, something about them, they do not take any time. They're beep, gone. they're gone.
Yep.
And you won't ever see them again.
Yep.
And so I was, that's a great question, because the guy that I went out there with this year, we were having this conversation about what is harder for someone east of the Mississippi to come and learn how to go and hunt a spot and stalk type scenario, who's used to tree stands or blinds, right? Or a guy who's out west coming to hunt whitetails for the first time. And so I don't have that experience, but I will say that if you're used to sitting in a tree stand all day long, you're going to go out west and you're going to want to wait a lot. You're going to want to sit and wait, and you're going to want to look and like take your time on things when honestly you should be pursuing much more than you should be sitting. And so that's something that I had to learn. On top of that, a guy going from I've had conversations with Western, you know, mule deer, elk hunters. They come and hunt whitetails out of a tree stand, and they're so bored they can barely take it, because it's just the strategy is two completely different things.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I mean, definitely if somebody coming out here, they don't have to really prepare for being in shape or anything. Yeah. Us to go out west, there is some level of being in shape so you can handle some sort of miles and then the terrain that you have to encounter. But as far as like the skill set and everything, I would think that, you know, with what you said with about the whitetail out there, they are very jumpy. Mm-hmm. Can you correlate that to whitetail in a tree stand and how, so like say you get busted here in a tree stand, are they going to do the same thing? Are they going to bolt right out of there?
I don't know, man. If a whitetail busts you, they stop in the Midwest, they'll stop and they'll stare at you, and they will come around, try to get downwind of you and all that stuff. But out there, there's no cover. Like if they're on their feet, there's no cover. So unless they drop down into a drainage and use terrain as their cover, there's so much more cover out here. And I think that's where you're going to see the personality differences between your traditional Midwestern whitetail and your Western Plain States whitetail. Well, that and the fact that, I mean, people are shooting out of their truck windows at these animals all the time. There's coyotes chasing them, you know, mountain lions potentially in some of these scenarios. And so it's really, it's just a completely different environment. But I will say this, driving home, I said to myself, whitetail hunting is way easier in the environments that I hunt in, you know, and I've hunted Michigan public and things like that, right? I've gone... I just feel like whitetails east of the Mississippi River are harder to hunt than mule deer west of the Mississippi River.
Do you think that's because you're able to identify sign a lot easier in the Midwest than you are out west identify sign for mule deer?
Yeah, that's a great point. The answer is yes, but two, the answer is kind of no at the same time, because what do we have? We're closer to whitetails where we live.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? We're able to spend more time in a given year hunting whitetails than going out west and scouting for mule deer. And so it's a yes and no question, but just the only thing that I'm really comparing them to is my exact scenarios, right? I'm not comparing myself. Like I'm saying the way I hunt in Iowa, hunting whitetails is way easier than hunting mule deer in like Western South Dakota. And so
I agree.
You know what 100%. I mean? So it's like, I'm not walking 2 miles to get to a tree stand, but I am walking 2 miles to get to a glassing knob. And then I have to quarter my deer and debone it, take it out into the woods, then hike with an additional, you know, 50 to 70 pounds. I think I was probably added 50 pounds of meat with the head to, and the other guy I was with, he took a pack of meat as well. And so now I got to hike back 2 miles. If I shoot a deer in Iowa, more than likely I'm dragging it up or down a hill and then putting it in my truck. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. And yeah.
So physically it's much harder, but there's also like just getting closer to them. There's no cover. So you have to, like, the way that I've been doing it and kind of how you've been doing it too, is you got to be right on top of them to get on them. There's no there's elevation change, but you're at the same elevation that they are, and you got to be either above them or below them, and you're shooting up or down. It's just, I don't know, man. It's a lot different. That's what I should say. It's a lot different, but I still feel like hunting whitetails is easier.
I agree with that. So with hunting whitetails, now you're starting to get your daughter into it. How do you approach that as far as like trying to teach her, or are you letting her try to learn and ask questions?
Yeah, so that's another great question. You might be the host of this thing after all here pretty soon. You know what I mean? And so my daughter, right now what I'm doing with my daughter is I'm showing her everything. Hey, that's a rub. That's a scrape. This is where we're sitting. This is why we're sitting here. I'm not really letting her figure anything out on her own quite yet. I think that will come when she gets her first deer and if she wants to continue to go and do it. My oldest boy, now that his sister went, he's like, Dad, I want to go. He wants to be part of it now because it's more like a jealousy thing than it is like a, I don't know. You know what I mean? And so he wants to go out now.
I do know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so daughter, I'm just showing her the ropes.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's what I did for my daughter is I showed her the ropes and everything, and I let her kind of take the lead on it. She kind of tells me when she wants to go, where she wants to sit. She would be there every single weekend if we had the time for it. You know, when she's not in school, she'd be there. Yesterday, we got the crossbow out, and we zeroed it back in with some new bolts, and we both shot it. She enjoyed it. She had fun. She just kept telling me, Daddy, I loved it. It's great. And in the meantime, I'm trying to get my son into it, and I said, hey, we're going to be over there shooting. When I get it zeroed in, all you have to do is literally come over here, sit on a chair, and practice shooting it. And he says, well, I'm playing football. I mean, I guess let me know when you're ready. And he never ended up coming over to shoot it, you know, so I'm not going to push it with him either.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the same thing, man, pressure. I'm finding that out, that you have to apply some kind of pressure to kids just in general, but you also don't want to apply too much pressure and then they give up and quit. You know, you got to prepare them for everything, but you also don't want to put additional pressure to break them. And then they don't want to hunt or fish or play sports or just be a contributing member to society. I don't know, but it's not like, it's always difficult. What do they say in Hollywood? They're like, don't work with kids or animals.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so. But other than that, I did take my daughter out on her first ever youth deer hunt. Had a 20-gauge all ready to go for her. And, dude, it was an amazing night. I mean, we saw a ton of deer. And I'm going to give you a very brief, abbreviated version of this so then we can get into next week's or the topic today. We show up, we sit in a fence row, and it's perfect. There's like this empty pocket in this fence row with branches hanging over, and they just presented this funnel right to where I thought deer were going to come through. And and right off the gate, she fell asleep. She got there, and she fell asleep. And it's like 4:30, 5 o'clock, and she just got tired, and she fell asleep. And meanwhile, I'm jacked up because I know I have some cell cam pictures, and there's a lot of deer crossing this gap in this fence, in this gate. And so I know deer are coming. Well, a spike buck shows up, and I'm elbowing her. I'm like, hey, deer, deer. And she's like, She doesn't. She woke up confused. She's like, what, deer? And I said, there's a deer right there. She's like, where? I can't see it. And then it hops away. Another doe walked right by her. Couldn't get the shot ready. And I'm like, hey, next time, you know, I was patient. And I was like, next time, please be ready because there are deer going to come here tonight. Well, I stood up later on, about an hour later. I stood up and looked behind me. And there's actually one of my target bucks eating acorns underneath of this tree with another 115-inch buck. And I'm just like, and they were kind of, they were working their way towards us. What does she do? She drops the gun on the ground.
Oh,
no. And it makes a noise. And the big buck heard it. And he's looking around. He was 170-incher last year. Now something happened to his antlers, and he's got these giant main beams and giant G2s and good brows. So he's like a 3x3 with some junk. It's weird. But he's probably a 135-inch 3x3. He's gigantic.
Wow, he went backwards, though. Huh.
Yeah, he did. I'm not sure why. Anyway, so he ends up hearing that. Him and they slowly work away. They weren't spooked, but they heard it and they're like, well, we're not going over there. All right. Sun's starting to go down. Here comes another group of bucks. And man, they came in and I'm like, Ava, are you ready? And she gets down and zeroes and she's like, I can only see his head. And he's broadside in front of me and I'm lower than her. I'm like, what do you mean you can only see his head? He's standing broadside right in front of us. And so there, I don't know. I honestly, to this time, don't know. Part of, there's a sliver that makes me think that she didn't want to shoot the deer. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm like, Ava, shoot him. He's at 14 yards. 14 yards. I'm like, Ava, shoot him. And so this buck quickly pulls his head up and he looks back in the direction that he came. And here comes this 140-inch 8-pointer right in, he was either 8 or 9, right in front of us. And so there was an old round bale, a big round bale. And surrounding it was like a, one of those cattle gates that they put the, like a fence.
A feeder?
A feeder, yeah. And so they put it right down in the middle. Mm-hmm. Well, they moved it, and so it was bare soil, and then some green stuff started growing up in there, and they were coming up to eat that, whatever was growing in that grass. And so she, and they're right in front of us. And so then the buck eats his share of whatever, and now he's looking like he's going to go to the bean field, but instead of going to the gate crossing, he's walking to the gap right to us. And he was so close, I could hear him breathe. And I'm like, Ava, you have to pull the trigger. Pull the trigger. Pull. She's like, I can't see. I don't have a shot. His body's covered. I just see their heads. And I'm like, okay, that bigger buck came 5 yards. I could hear him breathing. That's how close he was. And he turns around.
Is she shooting with a scope on the skin, the gun?
No scope. Same gun we've used for turkey. It's not a 410, but I use it for turkey hunting. It's a 20 gauge.
Okay.
And so, she knows you got to line up the beads to shoot. And she's like, I can't see. And I'm like, and I even swore. And I feel bad for doing it now, but it was a very intense moment because I had this giant buck at 5 steps from me. And I'm like, and I'm sorry for my language, but I'm like, Ava, pull the fucking trigger. And she's like, I can't. I don't have a shot. And it blows my mind. So, of course, that buck busts us. They run away. And she starts to cry. And now I'm starting to feel bad. I'm like, Ava, they were right in front of you. What happened? She's like, I did not have a shot. And so I grabbed the gun from her, put it on safety, put it to the side. And then I got to her level right where she was at, and I could not see any obstructions to the shot. And so I think what happened is maybe she got a little buck fever for her first hunt, and she just, I don't know. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
I don't know if she didn't move enough or whatever. I'm still kind of boggled. And I'm like, Ava, there's still deer that can come out. There's still deer that can come out. And then another little small buck came out a little bit later, after all these other ones spooked out. And then he didn't come in close enough. He was looking in the area because I think he was part of that original group, but he stayed back. And so he came in, and I'm like, Ava, I think you can shoot this one. But then, of course, he ran away too. And that was the only time we went out. I tried to get her to go out the next night, and she was like, no, I don't want to go. And so I'm just like, Ava, is there something that went wrong that you didn't like? Because I will make, like, I will do anything. I'll make it comfortable. I'll bring ice cream. Like, I'll get a more comfortable chair for you. I'll clear out these weeds, more weeds. I'll cut a shooting lane for you where an airplane can land. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she didn't want to do it. And I'm so confused. I tried to talk with her about it on the drive home. She didn't want to talk about it. And so I don't know if it was something that I did or said, but she froze up in that moment. And now it's just something that I gotta work with her on. And we got to wait now until shotgun season to where I can use that youth tag again.
And it seems to me from what you're saying is she really did struggle with having that deer in front of her and actually pulling the trigger. That's what it seems like.
I
think so. I mean, I can tell you obviously the buck fever thing is real. Mm-hmm. When I got my daughter into it, you know, she saw me turkey hunting. She saw me take a couple animals, but I don't ever remember her seeing me shoot a deer. So I never knew how that scenario was going to play out either. And when I took her for, I don't know what time it was, how many times she'd been hunting herself, but she shot over this buck at 20 yards and she kind of freaked out. Like, I missed. Now what, you know? And I said, well, we got to reload a bolt and we got to see what happens. Well, obviously with that situation, we were sitting in a elevated box blind, so it made a thump inside the blind, you know, when you miss, when you shoot the crossbow, all the deer run off and everything. So she's upset at that point. Well, as luck would have it, that same buck came back in that night, and I told her, here's your shot. You know, he was a little bit further. He was at 24 yards then, you know, so it was a little bit further, but she dropped him, you know, and so I don't know if the whole buck fever thing, she shot over him the first time because of that, or it's because it was in nerves. But what it sounds like, Ava got scared to pull the trigger is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it was the gun but we practiced, right? Even before we went out, we practiced with that gun. She shot 3 bullets out of it. Like, she was scared to shoot it the first time, but I'm like, hey, listen, because in Iowa, you can't shoot a 410. It's got to be a 20 gauge or higher for a shotgun. Or you have to have a rifle with a straight-walled cartridge, and I didn't have one of those. And so, you know, long story short, we practiced with a 20 gauge, and she hit this bucket at 50 yards. And I knew we were going to have a 25 or in-yard shot. And I'm like, Ava, if you can hit this bucket, you're killing it. You're going to kill a deer tonight. And then we got into the scenario, and I'm hoping that now that some time goes by, I can talk to her about what actually happened and try to see if there's something that I can change that, and maybe it's not. Maybe she went out there and she's like, dude, I don't want to kill this animal. You know what I mean? I don't want to, Yeah. I don't want to hurt it. But she's got no problem shooting turkey right in the face.
And I've seen that too, where it's just different, you know, it's just different. I mean, my daughter, she'll go out there and she'll just whatever, you know, but there are certain animals that they have more remorse for. I mean, just a simple, we have cattle, you know, and each year, we take some of them and we sell them, you know. Well, my kids get so attached to them, and I tell them every year, well, like, guys, it's not only food for the freezer, you know, but it's also money in your savings account and everything like that each time we sell a couple. And they still look at it differently than walking out in a wild animal. So I don't know. It's
yeah.
But I to like what you were saying with your son too, like my son's the same way. So I don't know if that's a maturity thing, a boy thing, or what it is. My daughter's completely different than that though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this intro went way longer than I thought it was going to, but I do want to talk about the title of this episode, and it's called What to Do When Things Go Wrong. And we talked a little bit about it already with what happens now that, you know, things went wrong with my daughter, and I kind of said that there's some unfinished conversations that I have to have. But I want to ask you a couple questions, throw some scenarios out there, and, you know, start talking about what happens out in the field when things go wrong. Now, the first question I have for you is this. You get into your tree stand, maybe it's a morning hunt, and it's perfect scenario, it's the rut, you know, it's the October, whatever the case is, you get in there and you get busted. Okay, and so that's definitely sucks. We've all been there before. What is your next step right now? You're in a tree, a doe, a buck, whatever, gets in behind you and blows at you and busts you. What's your next step?
I generally give it a little bit. I give it a half hour to an hour before I do anything. You know, if it's a morning hunt, if I sit till 9:30, is like a cutoff time for me. 9:30, 10 o'clock. If I've sat till that point and I haven't seen anything after that, I'm going to get down and move. And if I'm not hunting all day, obviously I'm going to wait till the afternoon and try it again. If I feel like it's a major spook, I'm probably not going to hunt that area tomorrow morning or even the next morning. I might give it a couple days just to cool off. But you said something at the beginning that it's the rut. And with the rut, we don't always know. And I feel like you can get by with a little more, say, spooking a doe than spooking a buck. Like a doe might come back sooner than what a buck would. And that's my hunch. Yeah. And if it's during the rut, obviously if that doe is going to get bred or coming into estrus soon, yeah, the buck will come back sooner in that period of time.
Yeah. I look at something like this, you know, like, okay, so that's great, the rut. Anything can happen. If I'm in good terrain, I'm probably going to stick it out, okay? Unless we have a scenario where the doe busts you, and then she goes out to 100 yards and then just continues to snort at you for the next however many minutes, you know, 15, 20 minutes. I've had that happen where I'm just like, so here's a little trick that I do. If I know a doe is going to bust me, I will make sure she knows I'm in that tree then. If it's just a doe and there's no buck following her, I'm waving my arms at her. I'm maybe even clinking my arrow against my stand very lightly, or if I'm going, you know, something like that. Then they don't snort and then they run away. They just run away, right? And so at least I know then they're gone. They're not coming back. And then I can, you know, I hope that there's more deer coming through the terrain that I'm at. So I do that sometimes.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that's a great tactic. I never thought about it that way. The one thing that when you were saying that, you don't always know all the deer that are in the area. So, I mean, if it's literally one deer blowing at you, it could have been a coyote that doe spooked from, or it could have been any other noise in the woods. They could have seen something that they just didn't like, and they start blowing at you too. So it doesn't mean just because you get spook, you know, you spook one deer that you're going to ruin your hunt by not having other deer show up within a half hour to an hour.
Right. And so that's if they catch my scent, right? Most of the time,
okay.
I'm in a, you know what I mean? If they catch my scent, they start to stomp or they get upwind of me and I know that they smell me. That's when I'm waving my arms. Now, if they catch, let's say a doe pops over to the hill and I'm tinkering with my bow or setting up something or twisting around and they catch me. If they're close and they catch me and they're like, boom, and they start stopping their feet and then they're trying to get downwind, then I'll do it again. But if it's just something minor where they're like this, then I just freeze, right? Mm-hmm. Just freeze. And usually what happens is they go back to their business and go away. Young bucks are the same thing. You don't get away with that kind of stuff with older bucks. But if I got busted in the tree and the wind gets them, I'm doing something to get their attention, to get them away from me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good idea. I think that's a good tactic everybody could use. I guess I never thought about trying to get that deer out of there right away like that. Yeah. But that is good, something good to use.
Now, the only bad part about that is then if there is a potential buck chasing her, if it's the rut, or if another group of deer are further down the line and I spook this one out, they run away, then the rest of the deer go with her. But usually that doesn't happen because I'm glassing I'm behind the binoculars a lot. So I kind of know what's coming into the area. I can't see everything, so it is a bit of a risk. But it's something that has worked for me before. Actually, it worked for me in 2022, where I had some does get downwind of me. I made a scene, and then 45 minutes later, the buck that I ended up shooting came in right down the same trail.
Okay.
So, yep. Yep, yep. Let's change the scenario now.
Let's
go into a buck, okay? It is a target buck now that busts you. Let's say he gets all of you. He sees you and smells you and hears you, whatever the case is. He picks you off and you're toast. There's no shot opportunity. What are you doing now to maybe put yourself into a new position to maybe relocate that deer or move? What's your goal now? Your target buck has busted you.
Well, I'm going to give you a scenario that actually played out almost to a T of this happening last fall. Target buck, big 8-point, mid-60s. And I was planning on sitting all day. This deer didn't come in till probably a little after 11 in the morning. And I had a northwest wind. And where I was sitting, I anticipated him coming from the west. And as I'm sitting there and I look at my phone and whatnot, and I peek up and I see this deer moving towards me, and he's coming from the south. So my wind hasn't caught him yet because he's actually still west of me. And he makes it to this fence line. And once he gets to the fence line, he's about 40 yards. He starts to come east and he picks his head up and stops. And he froze, and I thought, well, he's not going to smell me quite yet. He's got to make a few more steps, but they know, I see the lip curl and everything. His nose comes up, and then pretty soon I know that he smells me, and I know that he's looking in my direction, and he's got me nailed. And I haven't moved other than my head, but we don't know at what point he picked me off either. So, I mean, he could have saw movement first and then correlated it with the smell once he got down. That deer took off. I mean, it wasn't he didn't blow, he didn't, you know, sprint out of there, but he trotted off to the east. I never know where he ended up, because there's a block of timber behind me where I'm sitting, and then he ends up looping around, or he ends up further south after that. So my gut instinct told me that that deer had been there all week. The farmer had seen him earlier in the week, and he was to the west. I saw him coming from the south. I mean, he was literally on doe trails. He was scent checking trails and scrapes. I stuck it out that entire rest of the day. Took a midday nap and woke up to a couple deer out in the field feeding. And then by evening, I think I ended up counting probably 10, 15 deer that sit I never did see him again. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, I went back. There was a couple smaller, you know, a smaller 8-point and a smaller 10-point that went by, and I passed on in hopes that he would show back up. As luck would have it, no, he never showed back up. I never got another picture of him. Farmer never saw him again. So now I don't know. Did I blow him out of there and onto another piece and a neighbor shot him? But I stuck it out in that it was peak of the rut. I mean, it was actually probably on the downhill towards Thanksgiving time. I stuck it out just thinking he's desperate. He's wanting to, you know, he's searching out his second, third doe, whatever it may be at that point. So I stuck it out. I don't know if that's the best thing to do. In hindsight, I maybe would have sat in a different stand with that wind, knowing that that buck was there and that was the one that I was hunting. But given the fact that he busted me, I don't know if he was on a doe trail. Maybe another buck was going to come by. So I sat it out.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Yeah. I mean, good terrain is good terrain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And deer are in areas for a reason. It's because they feel comfortable, right? And so, I don't know. This is a hard one because I've had both answers to this scenario play out, right? I have been busted by a target buck, and I'm not after one buck every year. I'm after the top tier buck every year. So like there's usually four or five deer on my hit list on every property, three some years, you know. This year on one property I have three, on my other property I have two so far that I know about.
Sure.
And so on each property I have one that I would really love to kill, but I also have a couple that are I would shoot in a heartbeat. Okay, so three deer, let's just say, on this one property. And I, last year, I got busted by my number one buck, and I hit him a couple days later, and I had an opportunity at him, and then I knew I wasn't going to see him again. He shut off. He was all over the place on trail cameras. He shut off. He disappeared. I was in question of whether or not I got one trail camera picture of him about 5 days later. I knew he was alive. And so I went back in there in a different stand, great terrain feature, but I knew I probably wasn't going to see that buck.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, another buck shows up and I end up shooting him. The moral of that story is that good. You can go and hunt the same spots when you get busted, especially in the rut, because deer feel comfortable in these areas for a reason. And then especially bucks, this is my opinion, bucks in the rut have a very short memory. And if you bust them, man, I have seen I've seen bucks totally crush me. They got all of me. I mean, my 2-day no shower, gross scent in their nose. Yep. At 20 yards, they stop. They turn around, and in 25 yards, they forgot about me, and their nose is down to the ground chasing does again, right? And
right.
So
yeah.
I would hate to give up on a really good terrain feature or a really good pinch point type of scenario. If there's a ton of fresh sign in there and does are piled in there, I wouldn't give up on those.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was clinging to, is like, this spot is known for that. You get into the very last couple of days of October, and then you go all the way up till Thanksgiving. There's tons of deer, and it's like they feel safe in there. There's not a ton of does bedding in there. There's not a ton of bucks bedding in there, but there's something about this terrain that they travel through. They leave their sign in, and they feel safe in there. So that's why I stuck that one out. There's been other scenarios where I've been busted, and I leave right away. And it could be just the reaction of the deer. Like you say, you know, if a deer's going to sit out there and blow at you for 15 minutes, it's probably time to get down.
Right. And then the opposite is, man, I've got a buck I'd been chasing for 2 years, and he was in that 170 caliber. Probably I found out about him. He relocated onto my farm 1 year, like 2017, I believe it was, is the first year I saw him. I'm guessing he was a 4 or 5 year old, big bodied, mature whitetail. Never saw him on the hoof. I was chasing a different deer down in the bottoms. And I ended up seeing him the next year, started chasing him. So now he's been very active on this farm for 2 straight years. I come in and I set up to try to hunt this buck. He comes in a completely different direction, downwind, busts me. Not only does he bust me, but he comes in silent, and he busts me, and I'm not looking at him. So he stomps his foot, kind of, or he's doing like a head bob type thing to try to pick me off, but he smells me, and I didn't necessarily know about it. And he just, and I do this in the tree stand. I rotate my whole body to look back and not use my head. So then he sees me, and I never have seen that buck again, period. And so maybe he got shot, maybe he got killed, but I've been busted and have never seen deer again.
I can say the same thing. I can say the same thing.
Like, I don't know. Maybe he didn't feel comfortable on that farm. Or maybe he got bullied out of that another area, and so he moved in, said, okay, this is good enough. But he was a jumpy type personality buck, and he did not like to be – he didn't like it. And he's like, oh, shit, I'm out. And then he left, and he never came back. And I didn't hear of anybody killing him, so –
Yeah, I think that's why that you can't just narrow it down to there's only one way to hunt deer, is because all deer have different personality, just like people.
Yep, that's a fact. That's a fact. Okay, so this weekend, I am. So long story short, let's finish this one. Is if I'm busted heavy by a doe and I can't scare her away or whatever like that. I'm probably leaving. I'll give that stand a couple days, and then I'll come back to it.
Sure.
If it's a really, really good, like if that's early season and I get busted, I'll probably leave it alone. Like today, if I got busted today, I'd leave it alone and then come back to it. But if it's the rut and it's really good terrain, I'm going to come back there within a couple hunts, and I'm going to continue to hunt that stand.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now, do you have a scenario that you would like to talk about? Kind of a oh crap moment, or when things go wrong?
I think, I don't know if I want to say a scenario necessarily, but the one thing I can say is with a calling, I've been thinking about this too, and how we can learn from calling. It's and spooking a deer through using calls. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you use much of a doe bleat or a grunt at all, or if you rattle at all, or if you even have to. You know, some guys will, you know, blind rattle, the blind call period. And I've had success with both different ways, I guess. Mm-hmm. I haven't had as much success, obviously, with the blind calling. But when I think about calling to a deer that I actually see, what is the distance into which you are not going to call to a deer, or are you just reading its mannerisms? And then how do you learn and apply that to the next hunt?
That's an entire podcast, but my man.
Yeah.
So one thing, so it's a for me, it's a distance thing, and then it's a hierarchy of calls. And so I do not use or have had very little success in the of the years using a doe bleat call. I've never used it. Don't use them.
100% I agree on that.
Yeah, I've never pulled a buck in using a doe bleat. Remember those little cans where you would turn it over?
Primos. And
be,
You know, I've never had, I've never found success with that. The most success is if there is a deer, calm day, not a ton of wind, and sound is traveling through the woods, and maybe I can hear him, but he's out of shooting range. I always start off with the one grunt call, and that's simply just a burp, until I get his attention, right? I'll do it as many times as I need to, but usually it's just one, and it's one burp, and then they stop and they look this direction. In late October, before the does are ready to breed and the bucks are ready to breed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That that little grunt has worked for me more times out of all the bucks that I've shot than any other call. Now, the second call that has worked for me, but I use the least, is a snort wheeze. And the snort wheeze is, for those of you who don't know, is like a challenge call. It is basically one buck saying, I'm in charge, do not come over here or I'm going to kick your ass type of call. Mm-hmm. And I don't like, I'm going to do it right now, but I use my mouth.
That's all I do.
I just go.
Yep.
That's it. I do it as loud as I possibly can. And it has brought in 2012, it brought in the buck that I killed. He stopped. I tried grunting at him. He wasn't listening. I tried rattling. He didn't care. I snort wheezed at him, and then he got pissed. And then he was like, he turned around and came into me. And I say it in that order because that is my hierarchy of calls. I start with a grunt. If that doesn't work, I go to the antlers. If that doesn't work, then I go to the snort wheeze call. And it all depends on what the deer's movement and personality is doing. If they are raking a tree, that's awesome. If they're making a scrape, that's awesome. Those two scenarios right there, if they're sparring with another buck, you use that grunt tube and they're like, okay, well, I'm going to go investigate this. Or if they're a long ways away, you try the grunt, they don't hear it, then you don't explode the antlers together, but you start. I don't even tickle them.
No.
I start soft and then I get louder and then I get their attention, then I stop. That's all I'm doing. Just to get their attention, and they are, most of them are animals of curiosity. So there's two good things that happen. One good thing that happens is they'll beeline it right towards you. The bad thing is they get downwind to you when you call at them and you're toast.
So, okay, so there you go. There will be your question. So when you're calling, no matter if it's a grunt call, a can call, a snort wheeze, antlers, whatever, if you get busted by, it, obviously in this scenario, it's probably going to be a target buck or a buck of some sort, but say it's even a doe and you get busted by a deer by making calls, what's your move now?
Well, if I get busted by them, that means they've smelled me or they've seen me. And then I go back to time of year. What time of year is it? I go back to, is it the rut? Then I'm probably going to stay. If it's a target buck and they bust me and blow, like they're gone, then I'll probably get down and leave. And then I'll come back in a little, like later that night, or I just want to get out in the woods. That deer's not coming back. That buck is not coming back that night. He may stay in the area because he feels comfortable there, but I have never, ever, ever in my entire life, whether it's been called a 4-year-old buck or older, has I have never been busted by one and then have had them come back in. I've never had that happen to me.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. I've obviously had multiple encounters with 2.5, even a 3.5-year-old. They've come back into calls even after being busted, or they've just come in multiple times even when you didn't get busted, and they're just curious and they wonder where that other deer is, and then they walk off. But yeah, as far as older deer, they don't seem to come back in. And
yeah,
how much are you educating them?
Man, okay, here, this would have been when I was really first getting into deer hunting. I think it was probably 2008. So 2006, I didn't start hunting, but it was when I started taking hunting very seriously, is in 2006. 2008, I saw a buck. I rattled him in. He busted me. He got downwind to me, busted me. I saw him again 3 days later. I rattled at him, and that son of a gun took off on a sprint dead opposite direction from me. Okay? So I don't know if their brains are smart enough for this, but he associated that rattling with danger. And so maybe it takes him a year to forget about that. Maybe it's longer. I don't know. But I rattled at that deer one more time 3 days later, and he went bye-bye in the completely opposite direction. And so the other thing you have to think about is there's hunters on neighboring farms doing the exact same thing that you are. This buck could have been rattled at 8 times before you saw him, right? He could have busted another guy grunting or calling or snort wheezing, or, you know, tries to make a call and sneezes and just does something. It spooks him. So
yeah, and I mean, you notice how, I mean, deer walk to the edge of the woods or whatever, or they'll walk through the woods and they'll periodically look up 10 to 15 feet or 15 to 20 feet, and their eyes just sit there and they scan and then they walk. That's a personality thing too. They've either been busted or not. There's some deer, they'll just walk with their head down and chew all the way to the field, and then they'll feed out, you know, once they get to that edge, and they just look left or right and then they're out. I think it's a personality thing, but I also think they do have that memory span, you know, to where, especially if it's within a month or 2 months, you know, that fall that he's been called at. So
yeah. All right. So that kind of brings up another scenario that I want to run by you. And you're walking to your blind or your stand. You're walking in and you see a deer. He's on his feet already and he's by your tree stand. What are you doing next?
If that deer is by my tree stand and I don't feel like I can get by some cover, if
he's
the wind's
10 yards
not
from
in my
it.
Favor.
There's no possible way to get to that stand. What's your next step?
I'm going to have to just bail on that spot and try to find another spot for the evening, or even cash it in for the night or morning.
Yeah. So you would see that deer and you would almost say, okay, I know he's here. I'm passing on this spot tonight. I'll come back to it in the morning, and hopefully he comes back through in the morning.
I think with everything that I've learned over the years, you know, I probably, if you asked me 10, 15 years ago, what would I do? I'd probably try to, you know, hunt him from the ground at some point, or try to find something to be behind. to cover, maybe thinking and using the wind and getting upwind of them, or I mean downwind of them, and let them work to me. But I don't know. There's so many different scenarios with that now that I look at. I know he's there. I know he's comfortable. He's by, I mean, he's 10 yards from my stand. I might roll the dice and say, I hope he's there tomorrow, and I got to be here earlier.
Yeah. 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 Things just for me in those scenarios have never gone well.
No.
I try to, usually what happens is I try to force something to get to within shooting range of him. It's never gone well. However, I have had a scenario where I'm trying to think of what year it was. It would have been 17, maybe 2017 or 16 or something like that, where I walked in, I was going down a drainage. I saw two deer on their feet right next to my stand, the tree that I was going to set a stand up in, because I had it on my back.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I'm out. Like, I'm just going to leave. And I went, I looped all the way around to another drainage that met up with that same drainage down at the bottoms. But I looped all the way up and I went into that drainage, and the deer ended up coming by that stand that night. And I didn't kill anything that night. But what I did was I just kind of followed the line of travel that these deer were kind of on, and they didn't necessarily follow a ridge. They were just taking the military crest around the ridge tops, heading up to this ag field, and it worked. You know, the deer came by. There wasn't any shooters in this group of deer, but I would have never had an opportunity if I just went back to the truck. So it's like you know what I mean? Do you try? I'll tell you one thing I'm not doing is I'm not going to the tree stand that I see them next to.
So that's what I was going to say, is you brought up a real good point, is you said you had a stand on your back. Now, if I'm going to a fixed spot, no, I'm not going to hunt that spot. I may try to hunt another spot that I feel is safe with the wind, but if the stand's on my back, I'm probably just going to find a different spot and watch him, watch that specific deer from afar.
Yep. Hey, that's the benefit of being mobile and having like a mobile setup or a saddle or something like that. But if you have all of your stands pre-hung, it would be beneficial, especially on smaller parcels, to back out and just call that day a wash. Or one thing you could possibly do is sit your butt down, get a pair of binoculars out at a distance with the wind in your favor, and just watch the deer, wait for them to move out of the area, and then get back into the stand to see if something else comes by.
Oh, for sure. I think there's a lot you could learn from an observation sit like that, especially the time of year. You might learn where deer are coming from and going to. So.
Yep. All that knowledge, you know. And so that plays into the you can't kill a deer from the couch type of mentality. While you're out there, you might as well do something. It doesn't necessarily mean go home. It just means don't go to the stand where there's deer already at. Maybe you can go to a stand that's on a field edge up the drainage from them that you already have set out. Maybe you just observe from the top of the ridge and you kind of just sit there and wait too. You know, it's one of those things where you can't kill them from the house. You also can't gain any knowledge about what's going on in your woods from the house as well.
Right. And that's the best knowledge that you're going to get, because it's happening right now.
Exactly. All right. So this happened to the guy that I was with this weekend. He walks down a giant drainage. He's getting ready to come back up a drainage, and then he realizes he does not have his release. So he had to walk halfway down a drainage all the way back up to his truck and get his release. Have you ever tried, when I first started compound shooting back in the, you know, in the 90s, I didn't have releases. I had those finger rolls on the on the bowstrings, and so you could use fingers back then.
Yep.
Have you ever tried to pull a bow back without a compound bow back without a release to try to shoot a deer when you've forgotten your release?
Not to shoot a deer, I haven't. Obviously, I'll check timing and stuff like that by pulling them back that way. But to shoot a deer, no. I mean, many years ago, yeah, that's how I started shooting. And then I think I'd bought one of those cheap thumb peg releases way back when. And then I went to a wrist style release. And I mean, now I don't know if I could shoot a bow without it. I do have a recurve that I, obviously shoot without a release aid, but even that's got that, I think you were saying, like the felt or tab, finger tabs, what it's called. But no, that'd be painful, honestly, I think.
Yeah. And I've tried that before. And I've even tried to shoot at a doe without my release before. And it does not go well. I'll tell you this. If you forget something necessary, like even for me, binoculars, I use them so much where it's not necessary to have a pair of binoculars, but if there's something that I forget, like a jacket, and I'm not trying to force myself to sit out there in the cold anymore. Yeah. I'm going back to my truck to get it. My release, I'm not going to hunt without it, especially compound bow, right?
Yeah.
Like parts of a gun that you might need. I don't know. Like, I don't hunt with guns a lot, so I'm not sure. But, like, if you forgot a clip, you might need some ammo. You're going to go. And so long story short is when it comes to gear and preparation for gear, I do one of two things. If I'm in my rut zone where I'm hunting every morning and every night, then I am keeping everything in my truck. Everything. Yep. My bow, my arrows, my pack, base layers come in with me. Like, all my clothing comes in with me, but everything that I need, it's prepped and ready to go so that when I get out there, I know that all I have to do is slide on my backpack and start walking or my saddle, and I'm putting it on at the truck and I'm walking to where I'm hunting. It's all taken care of the night before, and I'm not scrambling to get things done. So it's not really just that's not necessarily a scenario. It's just hey, be a little bit more organized, and you will be way more efficient going into the woods every hunt.
Yeah, if you have the opportunity, I mean, just take get you another release, a backup release or something. Keep it in your backpack. Mm-hmm. I generally always have an extra one with me. It doesn't necessarily shoot the same because all releases are a little bit different unless you buy the same exact one, but. Yeah, I know, that's a great point. I forgot rangefinders, binoculars, releases. Oh gosh, a water bottle. There's tons of things that I've forgotten. But yeah, be prepared for the season when you decide to go out.
Yeah. God, I forgot. I had something I was gonna say about gear, but it's. God dang it. Anyway, it. It doesn't matter. Just be prepared. And really, that's it, man. Can you think of any other scenarios where people should be very cautious about?
I think for me, when I think about getting busted by deer, it's just the same thing as like going into the woods for the first time or the 100th time. Whatever you can take from that hunt and that experience, remember it and don't forget it. If you get busted making a call to a deer, just remember that there's probably another deer out there that's going to bust you doing the same thing. So just be a little smarter when you have that stuff happen to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you go into this, right? And so the name of this podcast is called the How to Hunt Deer Podcast. Well, we don't hunt where you hunt. And so the only way to educate yourself on becoming a better woodsman and deer hunter is to basically go out there and fail, because you will never learn about how to become more efficient in the woods listening to two dumbasses talk about deer hunting, right? Like, you have to go out and experience this stuff on your own, and that is where it clicks. that is where you will have the aha moments and you'll be like, that's what he's talking about, right? Okay, now I see. I failed. Now I know I don't need to do that again. I failed. Now I maybe I should try this time or that this time. It's, but the more of that you have, I cannot, I'll be honest, from 2006 to 2016, I killed some deer, but it was the most frustrating hunts, like decade of hunting that I've ever had, because I was failing and relearning and failing and relearning a lot in that time frame. And basically it made me that 10 years of hunting made me the hunter that I am today. And I'm pretty efficient. Now that's not me sitting here bragging. It's meaning that I had to go through 10 years of getting busted in order to have 10 years of success.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's definitely all the lessons that you need to learn from, but you got to remember those lessons. You can't forget about them and get lazy. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're in year 12 and then you're doing the same thing over again because you thought you could outsmart a deer.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's a great point to shut her down, because that's the moral of this conversation, right? It's the basics, you know, you learn from your failures, and if you don't, then you're going to have a rough time out in the woods and you're not going to be a better woodsman. So, Jason, man, really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Friendly reminder to everybody who is hunting in a tree, and that is to wear your damn safety harness, because we've had notable people fall out of, remember Hank Parker?
Yeah.
Bass fisherman, and hunter and everything. He recently fell out of his tree because he wasn't wearing some kind of safety device. And, so especially with kids, man, like you owe it to your family to be safe in the tree, wear a safety harness, and, take the extra precautions. That's one thing where we talked about this earlier. If I forget my safety harness, I'm going back to my truck.
Oh, now, for sure.
Now I wear a saddle all the time, so it's on me at all times. So my safety harness is my saddle. And so it's with me at all times. And long story short, be safe, have fun, and good luck out there this year. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.